This is Hacker Public Radio, episode 3599 for Thursday, the 19th of May 2022. Today's show is entitled Linux and Laws SAI, Slack or a User's Perspective. It is hosted by Monochromic and is about 45 minutes long. It carries an explicit flag. The summary is a discussion with a longtime Slackware user about this oldest Linux distro still alive.
This is Linux in Laws, a podcast on topics around free and open source software, any associated contraband, communism, the revolution in general, and whatever else fancies your tickle. Please note that this and other episodes may contain strong language, offensive humor, and other certainly not politically correct language. You have been warned. Our parents insisted on this disclaimer. Happy Mum! Thus, the content is not suitable for consumption in the workplace, especially when played back on a speaker in an open-plan office or similar environments. Any minors under the age of 35, or any pets, including fluffy little killer bunnies, your trusted guide dog, unless on speed, and cute T-Rexes or other associated dinosaurs. Welcome to Linux In-Laws, Season 1, Episode 56. Martin, how are things?
How are you?
Martin, can't complain. And how's the Isle, formerly known as the United Kingdom, then scaled down to Kingdom, and now some island in the North Sea?
That's a good question. What's the difference between an isle and an island? I thought an owl was the thing in the middle of a church, but what do I know?
Ireland, Martin, Ireland. Island. I'm confused. Yes. You're confusing me, Mr. Visser.
I know, words are difficult, aren't they?
Indeed. Exactly. This is one of the reasons why we do a podcast, though.
Yes.
But this is not about us, but rather about a very interesting topic, which nicely brings us to our guests, brings me to our guest tonight, or rather Martin and myself. We're going to talk about something called Slackware, and we have no other on the podcast than my esteemed friend, acquaintance. Lars, what's the word I'm looking for? LUG member, yes, of course, co-member, whatever. Somebody that I know from the lag, but Lars, why don't you introduce yourself before I make any more mistakes?
Yes, well, what can I say? I am a member of the LUG in Frankfurt. And I worked, quite some time with Slackware. In the beginning, when I first go to the LUG, everybody gets asked which distribution he is using, and I said Slackware. And the other guy said, you are this one. And the ice was broken. Can I say this in this way?
Yes.
And you were being serious at the time.
Yes. How long was that ago, I wonder? Or how long ago was that?
How long? You were there too. 2 years? How long I'm going coming to the LUG? 2 years?
More like 3 years, I think. No, it's more than that.
No. 7 years, not.
5? Well, you were there for the first couple of mouse door open events, no?
Yes.
We started them in 2016, so that's at least 6 years.
Yeah, you probably like really? Everybody else, lost a few years with the lockdown.
Yeah. The age is going on, and some time will be lost.
Fucking older.
Okay.
Exactly.
Sorry. Anyways, I used Slackware, I think, over 10 years. And yeah, Christoph, you asked me to have a chat over Slackware in the view of the user.
Absolutely, and this is what this podcast is all about, or this episode of the podcast is all about anyway. But before we go into the technical details, Lars, maybe you want to shed a little bit of time or sentences or whatever, or words rather, on your background.
Because you're this will be a short one. I am an interested amateur. I have no background of IT at all. I'm working in a total different business. And what can I say? I'm interested in Linux, and I work with Linux at home and laughing at Windows users if Windows does what it do over the time.
Don't we all?
producing dialogue messages and funny sounds and everything what doesn't have to do with productive working.
So, if I may ask, what brought you to Slackware in the first place, all these years ago?
Oh yeah, this is perhaps quite interesting. I was a student in the University of Applied Sciences in Rüsselsheim, and I was studying chemical engineering, and I lived in the dorm rooms there and sat in my dorm, and we were a few people who had an appointment that I will book a DSL internet port. Okay. And I helped to set them up the DSL connection.
Wow. So you did this under the cover? Under the covers, rather? Sorry.
Yes.
you were an ISP at your university without anybody knowing it, apart from the few people in the dorm.
Yes. Not all people in the dorm, just a few. Ten people, I think that was. And I had an old PC, and I decided that Windows is no option. It was the time of Windows 2000. Mm-hmm. Some colleagues, some students made this at this time and had an automatic task at 5 o'clock in the morning or 6 o'clock in the morning for an automatic reboot, that the computer doesn't reboot during the day randomly. And I doesn't want a illegal copy of Windows on a computer that is 24/7 in the internet.
Can't blame you there.
And then I have no clue of Linux. And then I'm gone to the MediaMarkt and bought SUSE version 8 or something.
Okay.
Something like that.
So you were a SUSE user, okay?
No. I wasn't.
Never used it.
Exactly.
See.
Because I tried to install it. Uh-huh. I tried to install it, and after 1 week of try and error, I said, if no one knows someone who have a clue of Linux, I have internet. I ask everyone, do you know Linux? Everyone said, no, And I ask, do you know someone who knows Linux? And everyone said, again, no. And then I said, okay, until end of this week, if there is no one who have clue of Linux, I have internet. Have fun. And at the next day, a student, one of these small group, knocked on my door and said, hi Lars, this is Sven. Sven knows Linux. And Sven was also a student and was part-time administrator at the Frankfurt Airport. And he uses Slackware for his machine. And he comes, he took a seat on my computer, and I thought, okay, you can watch him over the shoulder and learn something, because you don't want to be the one that after the installing and in the operational time come every second over the other with another problem, with, oh, how I can do this, how I can do that. Nerve-wracking. And yes, after 30 seconds, I thought, okay, it was a good plan, but it doesn't work like it is intended. He installed Slackware, he configured Slackware, and I learned Slackware. Something about 6 months every day, I read in the internet, I looked at my configuration without GUI, everything on the CLI, and just when I doesn't go on with a problem or solve a problem, then I called him. And yes, it was a little frustrating because, and I think every Linux user knows this, he comes to my place, he sat on the computer, he opened the right configuration file, he set this one character right, what was wrong, and everything goes right, and everything is very well. And yeah, over the time I learned to use Slackware, and then I decided that I will use Slackware not only as a server, but as a desktop. And voila, I was a Slackware user.
Interesting. And kids, for those of you listening, that was even before YAML, where a single character would make a difference. But Martin, over to you.
Yes. Do you remind me which year this was?
1993 or something, right?
Yeah, okay. Oh, yeah, you mentioned Windows 2000,
didn't you? Yeah, I'm joking, Martin. I'm joking. You go out there.
That was Slackware 8, I think. Version 8 or 10. But without a GUI, and it was great. It worked, and Sven said every line of code on the computer is a security risk, and you don't need a GUI. And he was right. It doesn't need a GUI. Because in Slackware, every configuration is text. And you don't have to have a GUI for fancy administration tools and so on. You have to know what you do.
Yeah. For sure, for sure. So you've used it for, well, let's say 10 years, to put it simply, or something like that, right?
Yeah.
And have you tried any other Linux distribution since? And if so, what is your opinion to stick with Slackware?
Yes, I tried many distributions. I installed a virtual machine and tried, from interest, several distributions, tried them out and looked at them and do some things. I had always a Ubuntu distribution in the virtual machine to test programs, and before I install them in my productive, in my main system. And yes, there were no at no time there were the wish to change until this point that I changed really to another distribution. The distributions I saw in the virtual machine weren't so interesting, and my mindset was changing in this Unix way, the KISS principle. And then I saw Ubuntu, and Ubuntu cried in my face, "I will make everything for you, and I am smart, and I know, no, you don't." it's not for me, not my cup of tea.
Okay, and are you running this now both as a server and as a desktop as well? Is that right?
Yes, I ran it as a server and as a desktop, and there were a file server and this routing system in this, so to say, and on the desktop, and it runs well over the years. If you have Slackware once fought down, it is your friend, indeed. But you have to fight it down first.
Okay. Are you saying it's very different from other Linux distributions, though? Maybe?
Yeah, very different. Not very different. It is a regular distribution. Okay. But in his philosophy, it has some differences to other distributions that may sound funny in some way. For example, nothing will be changed until it have to be changed.
Nice.
And
that's a good thing.
This is a good thing. But the installer of Slackware is the same installer who were created or programmed when Slackware was born. It is a D-message Windows system, and some people are laughing at this, but it is the same system, and it will be the same system until it is needed to change. And the bootloader Lilo, Slackware works with Lilo.
Ah, yes.
Something like this. Slackware have the editor at is in the distribution integrated. You know the editor at?
Yes.
Yeah.
I think I do, yes.
But I don't know anyone who uses it, including me.
No. this is my VI and Vim came around. It wasn't that easy to use.
There's always the stream flavor available called SED. if you choose that for a change, and the hipsters like Martin all kind of have ventured onto things like Vim and stuff, or VI for that matter.
Yes. And yeah, this is something. It is funny when you use Slackware and someone asks you, "Ah, yes, I need a serial console," and you said, "Yes, Minicom is installed," and every time on this you see the head of your opponent, of your chat partner, is banging on the table on these, no? What bootloader do you have? Lilo, POC. What is here? How will this and this be done? Oh yes, this is easy. You go to this file and change this to that, POC. Yeah, but I was really happy with it.
Well, that's the important thing, no?
Yes, of course. And I learned that these original Unix traditions are good. One program for one task. These things are. And I live in this context after these philosophy doesn't understand the other things, like programs who want to do everything. No. Why? I see no reason. It is complex, doesn't want... It is a beautiful program, and it runs, and you can make a lot of things, but I need not one program who makes all, but not in the right way. I want to have a program for email and a program for my address, for my addresses, and a program for my calendar, and so on, because these programs that I choose, and it is my working and not some work tool chain or workflow that a developer thinks that it is the right for me. And I want to choose an email client. I want to choose a separate address database and a calendar program and so on. Many distributions want to make this decision for you. Like Windows does it too. Windows is the best example for this. If you want to use Windows, presses you in his way, in his workflow, in his tool set. But this is not mine. And you lose efficiency through that, I think.
Very true. So what do you think makes Slackware different from other Linux distributions? Like the ones like Ubuntu or we kind of already touched OpenSUSE, but maybe CentOS, when it was still the rage, or for the matter Debian.
I think one big point is that Slackware doesn't have a dependency checking. It doesn't do it all. If you want to install a program, you can do this, but you have to check for yourself that all of the dependencies are fulfilled. And this is, again, a positive point in my eyes.
Okay.
Because the most programs I installed in Slackware had 2-3 libraries as dependencies. And every dependency checking I used, running into a rampage sooner or later. In SUSE, I wanted to install a CD player, and he installed 4 GB software, inclusive CUPS and some servers and so on. And no, what this is, doesn't have to be done because of I want to have a 270 kilobyte big CD player. This does not happen in Slackware.
So on the off chance, I mean, if you want to print a
CD
table of contents, if you want to print a table of contents for a record or something without CUPS, you're lost. No.
Yes, but I don't have to install CUPS to play a CD.
Well, that's true. But if you want to print something on the side, CUPS comes in handy, though.
Yes, of course, it's CUPS. Yes.
CUPS, of course, being the things that the community stole, or the thing that the community stole from Apple, because I think they came up in the first place with this printing subsystem, which is now the standard on Linux, by the way. So the community borrowed it and conveniently forgot to give it back, but that's a totally different ballgame, or story rather. Well, it's a very interesting perspective because out of convenience, I reckon that most people wouldn't bother with a distribution that doesn't resolve dependencies. Even Arch does this.
Pardon?
Even Arch does resolve dependencies.
It does. But I really, the only distribution I know that doesn't check for dependencies is Slackware at this moment. I doesn't know another one, if I'm being honest.
What about Gentoo? If you do the merge, I think that checks. Doesn't that check for dependencies, Martin? You have been using Gentoo for the last, what, undercover at least, because even your wife doesn't know about it, for the last 20 years, no? Mr. Visser?
Something along those lines. Yeah.
Exactly. And of course, Linux from scratch comes to mind, because you can forget about package management there, never mind resolving dependencies.
Yeah. Linux. Yes, Linux from scratch.
Details maybe in the show notes.
You are right.
So Lars, you're still using Slackware, or have you moved on to some more hipster-like distribution? Like Martin has all those years ago.
Martin, do you use Slackware some time ago?
Well, Martin
I may
want
have
to
done, but
it,
I don't
actually.
Remember that far back, I'm afraid.
No jokes aside, I've never given that a try, although I dabbled in Linux from scratch at some stage, but then I joined the hipster club and use normally predefined distributions like Debian or Arch or Ubuntu even.
Okay. And yes, I'm on Arch at this moment. I'm not using Slackware anymore.
What caused you to make that move?
I was frustrated. Slackware on the version 14.2 was extraordinary long, the official release. There are two branches, the stable release and the current release, and the current release is the development branch. And it is updated daily, and normally it is stable, but sometimes not. You can update daily and everything normally works fine. Sometimes it breaks your system. And I don't want this on my productive computer. I want a stable distribution with stable programs and want to use them and doesn't want to bother of their stability or their dependencies. And so I used the stable branch. Okay. It gets security updates and it is there and you can use it. But at one time it was so old that I can't use programs because of the version of the glibc.
Mm-hmm.
These programs aborted with the message that my glibc is too old.
I see.
And there is no way for me then. And something like PHP or PHP, the version of PHP was the version that is version 5, was version 5. That's and version 5 is not only out of his time, it is achieved and away. And yes, I tried to write an email to Patrick Volkerting to explain my situation, not to get an answer or get something like to get an excuse or something. He have his work and he cannot excuse for everything one of his users likes at this moment. But I just wanted to write it down. And the email came back because it was not deliverable. And at first I thought I made a mistake and I doesn't. I wrote this email again, and the same answer. I got the same answer from the mail server that this email, the official email from the official homepage of Slackware, cannot be delivered. And at this point, I decided that I will change my distribution, and I ask about another distribution, and then I installed Debian first. But Debian wasn't the right thing for me. It is a good distribution, but not for me. And then I installed Arch, and Arch satisfied my needs more or less till now, and I'm happy with it.
That's the main important thing, but then you're using this on an Intel, right? On an Intel processor.
Yes.
So no fancy ARM 32-bit
perhaps
Arch. So because
it is yes, AMD and Intel processors, yes. Yeah,
because as we all know, the Alarm project gave up on 32-bit ARM support just before Christmas.
Okay.
So that's the reason why I have to kind of make up my mind if I want to run the 32-bit ARM systems, and there are quite a few of them sitting in my zoo, on Debian or something else. But that the jury is still out on this topic. Martin, any questions from your side before we close this off?
Yeah, this one, I mean, it looks like Stackware was pretty popular some years ago and then went a little bit on the decline. So how are you seeing that from your perspective? Do you see many fellow Stackware users, or judging by your opening comment, there aren't that many out there, right? So do you see the evolvement of Stackware going forwards?
Can you repeat the question?
Yeah, so I mean, it looks like the usage of Stackware was quite high, right, some years ago, and then it sort of slowed down and lowered. It's, I don't know, much lower in the usage rankings of the Unix distributions, right?
So yeah. I'm
just wondering how do you see other users using Stackware, and is it slowly declining further, or that as people are adopting other, choosing more mainstream Unix distributions, is that what your experience
is as well? Yeah. In my eyes, the Slackware community always was very small, but yes, it was, in my eyes, it is a small and close-knit community. And there were a German forum for Slackware at this time I began, and they were administrators and professionals using Slackware on their work, and gave really good answers if you asked the questions right. Everyone knows it, that you have to make a small example of the problem to explain, or doesn't use questions like, oh, I have a problem. And yes, that's the question. And they were very helpful. They were kind, and they helped as they could. But in this forum, too, it is that person for person changed to another distribution, I think. And this forum isn't anymore. It is like quite few years offline.
Okay.
And I think one of the reasons is the actuality of the packages. If I have a distribution who is mainly for server use, I cannot use PHP 5 and update it only to another or to a later version in the testing branch. These things, don't understand these things. I don't understand this decision from Patrick Volkerding, who is the benevolent dictator for life. But if I have a distribution for servers, I have to have some packages actual. I have to update them regularly. If you don't do this, more and more people will change to another distribution and don't use your product.
Well, that's the case, I reckon, with any decent open source software. I mean, if you don't maintain it, if you don't improve it, it will fall by the wayside, and eventually you're talking about bit rot. For example, there was a file sharing client by the name of C-File. I mean, links maybe in the show notes, that exactly suffered that fate about 5-7 years ago. So many people who at the time were using C-File moved off to other file sharing solutions like Nextcloud and what have you. That's exactly what happened.
Is this a question? Is this a valid answer for your question, Martin? Or
yeah, I think that's no, that's very good. It sounds like it is on the decline, sadly. But
yes, it is the oldest active distribution.
It's got a really good name as well, right?
Pardon?
25 years, right? If I'm not completely mistaken.
It is 3 months older than Debian.
Okay. DistroWatch says here 25. Oldest still alive Linux distributions.
Yes.
25 years old, something like that. Yeah. Wow. Yeah. That's a long time.
That can be. And Martin, you said something, but it was understandable.
That's usually the case when Chris is talking.
This remark will be censored, of course. That goes without saying.
Indeed.
Martin, any final remarks before we part ways? Before we do the proxies.
It's got such a good name, really, hasn't it? Slackware. So. For the name alone, it should stay around.
Yeah, for the slackers among us, right? Insane. Okay, time for the poxes, I suppose. The poxes are a trademark thing within laws. This is something that is worth mentioning. Anything goes. Martin normally mentions movies, some illegal drugs, counterfeit money, that sort of thing. I normally stick to books and other cultural achievements.
Okay.
But really, anything goes. So, Lars, what's your pick of the week then?
My pick of the week. Let me see.
Anything worth mentioning, essentially?
Yes.
Why don't you go first, Chris?
I'm tempted to mention DistroWatch actually for a change.
Okay.
But that's an easy one, I suppose. So DistroWatch it is. Last, Martin, whatever.
Yeah, please feel free, Martin.
I'll go next. I don't know if anybody's ever seen the film The Ipcress File, which had Michael Caine in it.
The what?
The Ipcress File. It's like a spy movie from the 60s.
Is that one of your art house movies, Martin? That nobody knows.
No, it's not art house. It's got Michael Caine in it, so it's hardly art.
That classifies. Martin, why don't you enlighten us about the latest addition to your art house collection of movies?
I like art house.
I can't help you with that, I'm afraid.
Don't worry, just summarize the whole thing.
What are we summarizing now?
Your pick of the
movie. Right. No. So it's not a movie. The original movie was a 60s movie, and now there is a series along the same lines come out, which is also very, if you like, sort of 60s Cold War type scenarios. Yeah.
If I can find these details, maybe in the show notes.
It's on ITV, which you probably won't be able to get in your country. You can just set up a VPN.
Well,
right?
You see, exactly. So this VPN site normally does the trick. So if it's on ITV, that's almost halfway towards the Hard House movie, you know?
Yeah, it's just quite arty, yes. In my opinion, anyway.
ITV. What can I say? No, I'm joking. I mean, if you would have said BBC, yes, by all means. But well, fair enough. Maybe I can dig it up. You never know. But last but not least, yes. what's your pick?
The pick is Meet the Feebles. The film Meet the Feebles.
Yes.
You know Meet the Feebles?
Yes. I wouldn't say I know it, but I heard about it. So.
But you have to drink a lot of alcohol before film.
Don't worry about it. So, any time of day. Yeah.
<You're right. laughs> So, I mean, I only know vaguely of it. So why don't you enlighten us, Lars?
It is really funny. It is out of the life of shows. And it is
weird.
Really
yes,
weird.
Thank you.
and it is... the opposite of all art house films.
Sounds good.
But this is ancient, right?
Yes, not ancient, but it have a few years on it, yes, I think.
IMDb talks about 1989. Not all things new are
good, you know, Chris. They made good things in the past as well.
And it is not in Netflix and not in Amazon. Amazon available, yeah. And so on. And you have to have it physically. Yeah.
Lars, do you know who did this? I'm quite impressed. Who directed this movie? I should be more precise.
Peter Jackson, 1989.
Yeah, that's exactly the one. Exactly that Peter Jackson that did some sort of strange trilogy about elves or something. Details maybe in the show notes. Martin, you normally watch that kind of movie, you know?
With puppets and so on. It is really funny.
you don't mean Lord of the Rings then? No?
As a matter of fact, I do.
Oh, if that classes as art house movies, then yes.
So, people, if you have any questions about art house movies, the email address is Martin.
As long as they're limited to Lord of the Rings.
Any parting remarks before we close off the show? And I don't want to hear art house movie now.
No. Okay. Well, I'd just like to say thanks to Lars.
Yes, Lars, thank you very much for being on the show.
You're welcome.
Much appreciate it.
I hope it is usable.
Absolutely. Especially given the fact that I do not speak Dutch, Martin tries his German, and we both fail at English, I suppose. So that's okay. No, Lars, jokes aside, thank you very much for being here. Thank you very much for taking the time. And maybe you're going to go back to Slackware at some stage. Maybe not.
Yeah, maybe. I have some ideas. But
that's always good to know.
Yes, yes. And I'm working on the talk about the package management of Slackware.
Yes, very good. And that nicely brings us to the end of the show. People, thanks for listening.
This is the Linux In-Laws.
You come for the knowledge,
but stay for the madness.
Thank you for listening.
This podcast is licensed under the latest version of the Creative Commons license, type attribution share alike. Credits for the intro music go to Blue Sea Roosters for their song Salute Margaret, to Twin Flames for their piece called The Flow, used for the segment intros, and finally to Celestial Ground for their song Sweet Justice, used by the Dark Side. You find these and other ditties licensed under CC at Jamendo, a website dedicated to liberate the music industry from choking copyright legislation and other crap concepts.
Why is your name Patrick Folkerding?
It's a practical joke.
Okay.
I always do that sort of thing just to confuse Martin. Most of the time, it works.
Okay.
But unfortunately,
your voiceovers aren't so good.
But unfortunately, as we progress with the episodes, this becomes less and less effective, I'm tempted to say. Mm.
You have to be more creative instead.
Oh, we had this already, so no sweat, yes.
Welcome, yes. Good plan.
Yeah. Very smooth.
How long do we need for this 1 hour shot?
we normally estimate about 400 minutes, give or take. I have been proven to be off on this one.
I have some food here on my place. We can go on.
if you want to get some water or some food supplies, now would be the time. Okay, jokes aside.
Well, apart from my co-host and his words problems, everything's fine.
We're going to cut this out anyway. There's always the outtakes and stuff.
Yeah.
You have been listening to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.org. Today's show was contributed by a HBR listener like yourself. If you ever thought of recording a podcast, you can click on our contribute link to find out how easy it really is. Hosting for HBR has been kindly provided by anhonesthost.com, the Internet Archive, and rsync.net. Unless otherwise stated, today's show is released under a Creative Commons Attribution 4.0 International License.